Hello and welcome to Eagle Eye View. I'm Jacob Norderman. Thank you for joining in for another exciting episode. When you think about basic training for the Army, what comes to mind? For most of us, it's crawling through the mud under barbed wire while being screamed at by a tall man with an even taller hat. While there is a lot of physical demand to meet for training standards, training is a science, and science can evolve. There have been recent news reports about how Army training and other military practices are changing with the times, and I have someone with me today who can tell us all about it and what it means for the future of the armed services. Dr. Nancy Henderson is an assistant professor in rehabilitation sciences. She holds a doctorate in physical therapy and has so many credentials and qualifications, the letters after her last name is basically the entire alphabet. Dr. Henderson, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Can you just quickly go over your background with the Army?
It started really early in my career, so I've been a physical therapist for 20 years.
Okay.
And a year and a half after I graduated PT school, I took a job working at Fort Bragg up in North Carolina as a physical therapist. And then since then, I have been working as a military physical therapist. So it's been going on 18 years now. So that is my background, and I also grew up as an Army brat, so I knew a little bit about the military just from being an Army brat, but then learned a whole lot more about it over the past 18 years that I've been a physical therapist working for them. And so my current role is, my full-time job is, of course, teaching in the physical therapy program, but I also still hold a part-time physical therapist position working at Fort Stewart in Hunter Army Airfield, so I still evaluate and treat active duty soldiers on a weekly basis.
These first few questions, it's a little bit of a game.
Okay.
And it's going to be a scale of 0 to 10, how likely it is you are to interact with this particular person. I have a list of 5 well-known, famous Army-related movie, cartoon, TV show characters. And what I want you to do is, on a scale of 0 to 10, give me, as a new recruit, the likelihood that I will interact with a person who looks or resembles this character. Sounds good?
Yes. 10 being really likely, right?
Exactly. Okay, 10, like it's almost required that you'll see this person.
Gotcha.
All right. Let's start with Gunnery Sergeant Hartman from Full Metal Jacket. For those of you who don't know, he's the guy who basically just hurls insults at the young recruits.
I would say, if you had asked me 20 years ago or when I first started, I'd probably say it's more like a 10, like okay. A 9 or a 10 during basic training. But now I think that has changed a little bit. The culture has changed some. So I'd say it's probably more like a 6, and that would only be during basic training.
So you would say almost at that particular time, the stereotype that we think of for basic training, it was basically the standard.
Yes. Yes, I would say that is accurate.
All right, the next one. Benjamin Hawkeye from, he was Alan Alda's character from MASH.
I remember that one. Similarly, I'd probably say, middle of the road nowadays.
Okay.
Yeah. My husband is a retired Marine, and so if you ask him, he may get some differing questions from Marine Corps versus Army.
All right, so far the depictions are holding up rather true. My third character for you, Lieutenant Dan Taylor from Forrest Gump.
Oh, he was fun. That is probably, goodness, because at least in this character then, I would say that's maybe like a 6 or a 7,
okay.
Only in like the more senior enlisted, so the people that have been in for a little bit longer.
All right, so it's just the grizzled attitude of
yes.
being in there a while.
Yep, so of course the longer you're in it, the more jaded you become a little bit. I think that's, and that's for me too, like anyone, right? Been around for a long time.
So what I'm hearing is you start off like a Hawkeye, you turn into a Lieutenant Dan, and then by the time you retire, you're a Gunnery Sergeant Hartman.
Actually, I think that's probably a very accurate description. That would be a good, accurate description of that.
My fourth character for you is Ethan Hunt, Tom Cruise's character from the Mission Impossible series.
So I would say, again, depending on like where you work and what your job title is in
sure.
the Army. So if you're looking at like some of the infantry or special ops, then you're like at a 9 or a 10. Some of the other ones, you're probably looking at like a 5 or 6.
Yeah. Also, it's a Tom Cruise character, so
right.
they're going to build him up, however, makes him look awesome.
Right.
And my fifth character for you, Beetle Bailey from the comic strips.
Oof, I don't remember that one.
He was kind of a almost like the equivalent of a hippy dippy army recruit.
I would say that's probably low likelihood. So, like, we're only talking like a 2 or 3 on that side for it.
We've got the personality arcs now. Let's get into the actual meat of the bones here. Georgia Southern has 2 new programs that were developed under the Department of Rehabilitation Sciences that were specifically created for what is known as the Army H2F Initiative, which stands for the Army's Hostilic, or Holy, which stands for, it's not holy. it's in its entirety. It is not a Catholic ceremony. No. It stands for the Army's Holistic Health and Fitness System, essentially the basic training program, correct?
If you take a look at something called an Army Brigade, which is a large group of people, you're probably looking at 3,000 to 5,000 soldiers, and there is 1 physical therapist for all of those soldiers.
My goodness.
So, as you can tell, like, obviously not really well resourced at that point. So the H2F essentially is going to allocate additional physical therapists and occupational therapists and nutritionists and cognitive performance specialists and athletic trainers and strength coaches all to a smaller entity of soldiers. So it essentially just increases the personnel and creates more of a holistic treatment of the soldier.
Okay, and when it comes to these medical professionals who are involved in this program, do they go through the same training as everybody else, or do they get kind of a more medical sidetrack and then get brought in on the back end for being involved specifically with the Army?
So that's a great question. So right now, anyone, you know, for example, physical therapist, if you're a licensed physical therapist and you meet the experience requirement for the H2F position, you'll be hired.
Okay.
But that doesn't mean that you know anything about military. So, and I could say that for, you know, I mean, I was 1.5 years out of PT school when I became a PT at Fort Bragg, and I was like, I have no idea what is happening, and I had to learn on the job. So, you know, I think that's a little bit of a gap that hopefully we're trying to help fill to a degree.
And how does it help fill those gaps?
So we have a program that we developed, it was actually in 2016, called the Soldier Athlete Human Performance Optimization Program.
Very clever name.
Which we call SAPO because military love acronyms, so you have to have like a good acronym, right? So the SAPO program, I think it kind of helps twofold. It is essentially taking our PT students, so our DPT students, and allowing them to do the education of the soldiers on injury prevention topics. And they actually go out to something called the unit's footprint, which means that they just go out to where the soldiers are doing physical training and actually do the education there. So it helps the brigade physical therapist because it kind of unloads them a little bit. But then it also helps my PT students because they get a much better idea of the population and their occupational demand, so when they graduate, ideally they don't have as much of a knowledge gap to work in that population if they take an H2F position. And one of our recent grads, she was actually one of the initial members of the SAPO program, and she graduated, and she is now the H2F physical therapist down in Texas.
You noted an education gap for this particular field. What areas typically fill that education gap? What's the specialized knowledge that they need?
I think it's really just understanding like the military culture. That's one of the things.
Okay.
There are a ton of acronyms which you have to really get a handle on. But then also just understanding their job demands are very unique, you know, so it's not like me who sits behind a desk most of the day, right? So they are out, you know, kicking down doors and lifting heavy equipment and jumping out of planes. And, you know, they have a lot of unique kind of job demands. And so having a better understanding of that really helps you to be able to treat their injuries and get them back to that level that they need to be at.
So with your position in the university, do you focus specifically on the students who are on this more military-specific path, or is it more of a broad, you have physical therapy students, and some of them just happen to be taking this path?
So that's a great question. So right now, in terms of like who we accept into the program, it's not specific to a military interest, but we have a application that the students have to fill out for SAPO, and then it's through kind of a competitive process that we then choose them. And so they, you know, it's a voluntary thing on their end, and they wake up early in the morning and they come out and do the education before class. So
how much early are we? How early are we talking?
I mean, they have to be out at Fort Stewart at 6:30 in the morning, so we're talking like waking up at 4 or something. So very proud of them, because then they start class at 8, and you know they go to 5 and the whole thing. So
basically a football player schedule at this point.
It's pretty time intensive. So you know, the fact that they really want to donate their time to do it just speaks to their interest in the population.
What do they wake up for at this 6:30 event? What is it that they're waking up to do?
So they, and a licensed physical therapist is always with them. So either myself or Dr. Worse goes, and we go out to Fort Stewart and we'll work with a specific unit. And then the students are the one that actually educate the soldiers. So on a variety of different topics, like mobility or running form or strength training, and they do a little bit of lecture and then a whole lot of lab. And they look at form and all that good stuff. And it's usually over a period of several weeks that we go out.
What I heard was that they wake up at 4 o'clock every morning to teach the mechanics of running.
Yes. Which is, again, really kudos to them, right?
Absolutely.
Like, want to wake up that early and go out and do that.
I had no idea that running could be such an art.
Oh, it is. Oh, my gosh. And you know, a lot of time, well, most of the time it's dark then, too.
Sure.
So you're like, oh, my gosh, like I'm exercising out in the dark, and I woke up super early. And yeah, so the whole thing, I'm very proud of them for doing it.
So for a person in your position, you have that military background yourself. You've lived in that culture, and you're working with students who have a military interest and don't have a military interest. Do you have a particular role in maybe not necessarily recruiting students to take the military role, but I'm assuming when you're with your students, there are some that may stand out as you would fit really well in this other thing we're working on. What kinds of traits do you look for?
So, I mean, obviously I should be someone who's motivated and invested in the population. If they have any sort of strength and conditioning background, that's really helpful. So a lot of our PTs are also athletic trainers, or also personal trainers, or also strength coaches in the past, because it's a doctoral program, so they'll have their undergrad in some other sort of fitness realm. That's always helpful, I think, too. But, you know, honestly, if they're willing to learn, then they're all good. I'm happy with it.
I'm with Dr. Nancy Henderson, an assistant professor in rehabilitation sciences for Georgia Southern University. With these two special programs that we developed specifically for the Army's H2F initiatives, what was the motivation behind starting new programs? Because for a lot of us, I'm sure when we think about military basic training or the Army in general, it seems rather traditional, it seems rather structured, and with something as large as it is, it can be difficult to try new things, one would imagine, especially in a world where there's a lot of screaming and do as I say.
Yes.
So
yes.
What was the motivation behind these two new programs?
Yeah, that's a great question. It was bred out of me working at Fort Stewart also and working here. So being able to work at both institutions, I think, gave me a little bit of a larger perspective. And so, you know, I'm a physical therapist out at Fort Stewart, and I see that we have more patients than we can see. And so it would be really helpful if we could prevent some of the injuries instead of just treating them retroactively. But there aren't enough resources to treat them all. So then, you know, kind of thinking outside the box and saying, well, I work at Georgia Southern and we have a PT program, and it makes sense to kind of bring them together, is kind of where it came from then.
Was the increase in demand and the increase in patients due to a lack of resources, or is there a particular cultural change that initiated more injuries?
I don't think it was a cultural change. I think, I mean, honestly, and you know, I mean, like, the Army's huge.
Yes, it is.
Like, the Army is huge.
One of the largest employers, you know, in the world.
Exactly. So, you know, to have, it's just, I think bred out of maybe not enough resources in general to treat everybody that comes through the door, right?
Sure.
So I think you have to be able to prevent some of them because there's not enough people to see them after they've been injured. And honestly, like injuries also, musculoskeletal injuries in particular, which is what I specialize in, cost the taxpayers a lot of money. And so it'd be really helpful if we could, you know, save some money and prevent them.
Election season never ends, does it? Always talk about the taxpayer.
Yes. And I'm a taxpayer. I'm like, I don't want to keep paying like all this money for all these people that get injured. So seeing if we can do something to help to decrease the injury rate.
Is there any kind of pattern in the types of injuries that are seen?
Yeah, I mean, in general, low back pain is the number one musculoskeletal injury in military in general. Shoulder and knee are follow that. So, but low back pain is a huge one.
I think that's just aging.
Yeah, I mean,
it's not necessarily army related.
Certainly part of it, for sure. For sure. You know, but they, you know, like with one of their occupational demands is something called low carriage. So it's when they put like a backpack on and they put a whole bunch of weight in it and they walk for 12 miles. And that's just, you know, really hard on the body. So you have to have like really, really good core strength to be able to withstand all of that load that goes on your spine. And so, you know, they have a lot of kind of job demands that we don't normally have, I think.
Sure.
Which then kind of just predisposes them a little bit to low back pain.
So there are at least more patients that are being seen, and Georgia Southern is playing a role in helping those patients and getting them the resources they need. And this was all brought about just by observation, right?
Yeah, I mean, it started from observation, and since I feel like this is how all good stories start, but like me and my friend who was the brigade physical therapist, we went to lunch at Chili's. And we just sat there and we were chatting. This was in 2016. We're like, somehow we should be able to like bring these two things together, right? Like and help each other. And then literally, it sounds so corny, but literally we took out a napkin. We started like hashing out ideas, and that's where it was bred at Chili's.
So over the years then, have you been able to see an impact being made?
Yeah, and it seems to be gaining traction also. President Marrero 2 weeks ago signed two new agreements, one of them with all of Fort Stewart and Hunter Army Airfield for the SAPO program, and another one with the entire Georgia National Guard for the SAPO program. So, you know, just essentially utilizing these great PT students to help them, you know, augment the military resources.
So what is it like for you in your particular background to take an idea that was written down on a restaurant napkin and turn it into something to where a university president is not only continuing but expanding its role? What's that like for you to see?
It's surreal. It's awesome. I love it. It's great. You know, like I never thought when we first did it that it would expand to what it is now. But, you know, it just makes sense to be able to partner the two institutions together. So I'm very, very, very thankful that I work at both places and that now I can see them essentially creating better partnerships and really starting to utilize each other's resources and partner in a great way. So, yeah, it's been fantastic.
And this also seems like an idea that can be easily installed and applied in just all regions across the country, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I mean, I think in my personal opinion, as we all, you know, as time goes on, you'll probably see military start to partner a bit more with academic and private institutions. It makes sense, right?
Like, absolutely.
You know, we need to be able to start creating those partnerships in order to augment our nation's military.
We've been talking a lot about working with a specialized population and being well poised to work with them and having almost a little bit of not civic duty to want to be involved, but it's inherently an area where maybe you need a little bit more inspiration and motivation. What would you say to a student who might be on the fence, who are considering taking this particular military interest path?
I mean, it's all I've really ever known. I've only worked on the civilian side for a few years, but for me, I would never choose to work in an environment that's not the military. Because, you know, from a civic duty perspective, I never really wanted to sign the dotted line myself. So I felt like, you know, now I'm kind of doing my part.
Sure.
In at least helping these soldiers to recover quicker and maybe prevent injuries and, you know, to be able to really work at their top potential.
How important is it for, I don't have a better word than organization, like the Army, to be as malleable as they can be with these particular practices? Because as we noted, it's historic, it's structured, it's got its rules and policies. But for something like this to show the benefits of having it in place, I mean, how important is it for an institution to be malleable like that? And what kind of role can these new programs make in its long-term success?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I mean, as you mentioned, historically, the Army has not been that, open to change. And it's such a huge entity that it's a slow-moving entity, right? Like, so to produce change takes a long time in such a large, organization. But I think over time, they've just been really open to more partnerships, especially locally. You know, they've been great about, being open to partnerships. So I think we're seeing that kind of Army culture change a little bit and being a little bit more flexible, being able to be okay with partnering with external, institutions. And then on the Georgia Southern side, briefly talk about our other program, because I think it really also helps to talk about the flexibility that Georgia Southern has shown.
Yeah.
And so we also created something called the Tactical Athlete Certificate, which was bred out of the SABO program. And so it's kind of an expanded version.
Does that have a fun acronym too?
TAC. Maybe not quite as much fun as SABO. It's the TAC and the SABO programs. Great. But it's a college certificate program, and it is only for active duty soldiers, National Guard, and Reserve. But what the Provost Reiber did, which was fantastic, is he authorized having these courses delivered in a 3-week time frame instead of a 15-week time frame, which is really much better for the soldiers for their work schedule to be able to accommodate college classes. And so, just the flexibility on our end, too, I think has been great.
Dr. Nancy Henderson, Assistant Professor with Rehabilitation Sciences at Georgia Southern University. Dr. Henderson, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
And thank you all for listening. Be sure to tune in the next 2 weeks for another exciting edition of Eagle Eye View. You can listen to all of our previous episodes on our website at georgiasouthern.edu, or you can find us on Spotify and all your other major podcast platforms. For Eagle Eye View, I'm Jacob Norderman. Catch you next time.